You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.
It's a bright and beautiful Sunday afternoon here at Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network, and welcome to another milk-curdling episode of Cutting the Curd, where we delve into the curds and whey and see what's doing in the world of dairy. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby. Our show today has been sponsored by Edwards of Surrey, Virginia. The Edwards family has joined Heritage Foods USA and Newman Berkshire Farm to develop an all-natural product line featuring Suriano hams, Berkshire smoked slice and slab bacon, and Berkshire smoked sausage links. These new products are produced exclusively from purebred six-spotted Berkshire pigs raised completely outdoors on independent family farms. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. For more about S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, visit www.edwardsvaham.com. And I'd also like to thank our producer, Jack Inslee, and our engineer, Nat Wiener, for getting this show out there to all you on the internets. So listeners out there, do you want to be a cheesemaker? Give us a call at 718-497-2128 or send an email to the studio info@heritageradionetwork.com. And who the heck knows, maybe we could get you hooked up with a cheese making gig. So 2 weeks ago, I did a show called So You Want to Be a Cheesemaker with Veronica Pedraza of Jasper Hill Farm. Today, I'm going to continue on that theme and chat with my good friend Luella Hill of Narragansett Creamery in Rhode Island. Narragansett Creamery is at the forefront of the Ocean State's dairy revolution, and Luella is the force of nature behind their wonderful line of cheeses, which range from fresh Italian and Latin American styles to rich, aged European-style cheeses. Welcome, Luella. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So what's going on at your house this Sunday?
I was actually just hanging some laundry out on the line, and it's beautiful and sunny here in Rhode Island, which it hasn't been in the past, as most of the United States knows.
Yeah, us too. We had some really bad rainy weather for the last week, but it's beautiful here today too.
Great. Yeah, and I'm making some soup, and the baby is taking a nap.
Sounds very idyllic and perfect. A good little relaxing moment.
So
to start off, I was wondering, could you tell us a little bit about the history of Narragansett Creamery and how you came to be involved with them?
Sure. So we actually around here, we say Narragansett with a little more emphasis on the T.
Narragansett.
Which is like the beer people know, Gansett's, that same pronunciation. So the background of Narragansett Creamery is we're not very old. We're about 3 years old, 3.5 years old.
Okay.
And it started out eight and a half years ago when I was in college and thinking that I was studying agriculture or nutritional anthropology or something like that, and really realizing that you can't learn that stuff through books, that you really have to go in and dig in and learn with your hands and your nose and your eyes. So I took time off school. I bought a ticket for Italy. I didn't speak Italian, but I just knew I had to get there. And I guess I sort of surrendered to serendipity, and I landed on an agriturismo. It was kind of the dead of winter, and I spent a lot of time shoveling pig do.
and everyone's got to pay their dues by shoveling the dew every when you first get started.
Yeah, well, it's the backside of cheese making all around. Even though obviously we don't milk pigs, but I was doing that. Then the farm next door, a dairy farm with 150 sheep, they needed a helper, and I quickly jumped on the opportunity. So that was right around this spring, right around this time of year, so when the lambs were coming in.
Wow. And what part of Italy were you in?
I was right outside of Siena in Tuscany.
Amazing. And so that's really, really bold of you. How did you decide where you were going to go in Italy? Was it just this agriturismo popped up how was that connection made?
Kind of random. I'm kind of one of those big idea and drop everything and make it happen somehow people. So I just knew I had to get there, and then I asked there wasn't a person that crossed my path during that time that didn't hear that I was going to Italy and wasn't asked if they knew somebody. So it ended up being my mother's cousin's daughter's best friend who knew of this agriturismo.
Unbelievable. I'm a firm believer in, you know, when you put something out there in the cosmos, it's like if you're willing to like just talk about it and ask lots of questions, you know, you're going to find the answer somehow. Oh. It'll probably come to you in the most like circuitous way, but you're absolutely going to find what you're looking for.
Yeah, totally. And I think it's why all these like social networking things that have allowed people to talk to each other are working so well, is because probably somebody has your answer. You just have to link up to them and find them.
Yeah, isn't that funny though? I find that like the social networking thing, I don't know, I guess I'm a little bit of a Luddite, but I've had more success with like the route that you took, you know, where you just like put the word out there, kind of more old fashioned like, I guess.
Just the verbal, like so-and-so said so-and-so said so-and-so.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's how I landed, but a lot of people have asked me, you know, like, have told me they want to go to Italy and learn cheese making, and I just want to throw out there that a really smart way to do that would be to just join Wolf Italia.
Oh, and that's WWOOFF, WWOOF, right?
Correct, yeah. Okay. Willing Workers on Organic Farms.
And they have a website. Is it woof.org?
That will be the main site, which will lead you to the different countries. And essentially with that, and maybe the listeners know what that is, and I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, I didn't know what it was, certainly, until a little while ago, and I feel like the more we put out there, the better.
So WOOF is this brilliant system where you can give support by giving labor and time to organic farms almost anywhere in the world, and you do that for free in exchange for learning the skills of the farm, some knowledge from the farm, and then they will house you and feed you. And if you join these networks like WOOF Italia or there's WOOF USA, you'll get a list. You'll have to pay maybe a $25 membership, and then you'll get a listing of all the organic farms that are members of that system who are looking for help.
I remember, I actually, it's very funny, I joined that organization too, because before I opened my store, I spent 6 months traveling, and I lived with different goat cheese makers in France and with a winemaker in Italy. And I remember I thought it was the funniest thing, because at that time to join, you had to send money. You couldn't, like, there was no PayPal. There was no, like, you know, way to do it online. So they're like, please send your money and wrap it up in aluminum foil. And
that's really funny.
And trust that it'll get to us. And I was like, okay. I was like, well, but sure enough, it worked. And
it worked,
it was very funny. I ended up, making connections with cheesemakers in a different way, but the listings of all of the different farms that you could work at, it's really, really incredible.
It's fantastic. And even if you don't speak the language of the country, by woofing, you often can find people who will speak English who can speak English, and that can give you a landing place. And usually people stay between 2 weeks and, well, in my case, I ended up staying for a year.
Wow.
So I moved to the farm next door, and they had never had an apprentice before, and they didn't speak English, so that was my instant, immersion into Italian. And I just fell totally in love. I just thought, this is the best thing in the entire world, being the farm, the smell of the sheep, the sound of the sheep, waking up early in the morning, making the pecorino, stopping at the middle of each day and eating a really beautiful lunch that was really simple and gathered locally. So not only did I learn how to make this variety, the pecorino toscano, both fresh and aged, but I just learned a way of life that, like, it made total sense to me. And I've never gone back, in the sense, like, it converted my whole being.
Yeah, no, it totally does. It really connects things on a different level. You see how the farmers arrange, the way the farmers, you know, what kind of animals they have, the way that they arrange their life, and their style of being influences the outcome of the cheese, which I think is like the most magical thing about eating cheese.
Yeah, right. And also for me, I didn't grow up on very gourmet food, and I think when I tasted that Pecorino Toscano, like right there on that farm, and they cut you a wedge, which is like, you know, got to be like 8 ounces, or like half a pound. You're just supposed to eat like an apple.
Yeah, they're like, manja. If you don't eat it, they're going to be mad.
Yeah. Like, you really, I the flavor, it was just so, I really believe in the energy of food, and I'm sure that was just like totally loaded cheese.
Absolutely. So was that kind of, that was one of my questions for you. Was that your like cheese aha moment where you were like, oh my God, this is it. This is like,
oh yeah.
Okay.
Like brings me to tears, like so beautiful. And I know people have these like food epiphanies. It's neat that we can like sort of have this moment of metamorphosis by eating something, and you know, all of our senses are sort of awakened, and then I'm like, then my brain goes, oh my gosh, this could be my life, like. I ended up staying for the whole lactation cycle of the sheep, and then
and how long was that?
So lambing is in the spring, right around Easter, and then sheep have a short lactation cycle. They give milk from the birth through usually mid-August, late August. It depends on the climate and the feed.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really want to make cheese with the late lactation milk because it can start to get a little difficult to work with.
Really heavy, right? Really thick.
Yeah, and it doesn't want to coagulate well when you put the rennet in.
Ah, okay.
And on
that farm, what would they do? You said it depends on the feed. Were they kind of like a really pasture-based? Were the sheep just out roaming the hills of Tuscany, or were they a little bit closer to the barn, or how did that work?
It was like, you can visually imagine that like classic patchwork countryside where every acre is a different person's property, and as this, you know, each, it looks like a patchwork quilt, like each little square, different color. So the Claudio and Magdalena, they actually didn't own their land. They rented from the government, even their house they didn't own.
Hmm.
And they were sort of, they were back to the landers, and back in the 70s there was an equivalent movement over in Italy. And they grew all the grain and put the sheep on, you know, after we milked the sheep each morning, they were brought out to pasture, which Claudio maintained. So I helped with the haying, and we, you know, put the grain in the thresher and all of that.
That's really interesting. So the back to the land movement, first of all, I didn't know that that kind of crossed, you know, the Atlantic, and it wasn't just like a hippie, you know, American thing. And then that there was government assistance with farmers getting land. That's pretty cool that people could get into farming without having to make the whole investment like they do here most times.
Well, actually, no, they just, it wasn't really government assistance, more like the government owns more land, I think, and they just rented a country house from the government, and that's more normal there than you'd never find that here.
Hmm.
And then they just rented, the same as a farmer might lease a neighbor's field, they just leased pieces of property nearby, like that, so we would walk the sheep down the road to like a little paddock that they, you know, rented from the neighbor.
Oh, how funny. Well, it's like, you know, free lawn service, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really cool that it's like not very much our mentality that like you can make it happen. You can be a cheesemaker and not own land. And obviously there's uncertainty in that, but it's totally doable.
And there's community in it, you know, which is what farming has always been about. And I think Americans are always kind of more focused on like, okay, I have to like get all this stuff myself, whether it's the facilities or the land or the equipment to make the whatever they're going to make. And that cooperative, that cooperative mentality is really, really just allows a lot of cool things to happen.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I totally agree.
So from Tuscany, you came back to, did you come back to Rhode Island, or where did you go from there?
So the sheep dried up, I like to say that, and floated away. And then, so we'd been selling our cheeses at this little farmer's market in Firenze, in Florence, and there was one other cheesemaker there. And so as soon as there was no more cheese to make in the sheep world, I went over to the other person, a woman named Tina, who had cows up in the Alpeninis, about 5 hours out of Florence. And I asked her if she and her family would like an apprentice. And so then I went with them, and we made Taleggio, a cheese called Latteria, which is in the family of, like, Fontina. I actually read once that Fontina, Asiago, a couple of others are actually, in theory, all the same cheese, but with different regional adaptations.
Ah, like different. I love it. Cheese is like, it's like dialects, you know?
Yeah.
It just changes a little bit from farm to farm, region to region.
Yeah, exactly. So the herd had 14 cows, and those cows grazed on a hillside as steep as the steepest hill you could imagine. And they just sort of walked vertically up their pasture. And
high altitude cows, they probably have stronger lungs than all the cows down in the valley.
Yeah, totally. And that this was a funner experience, whereas with the sheep, I was only 30 minutes from Siena. This one, I was, like, pretty out in the boondocks, and, you know, the house was 1,000 years old or something.
Wow.
And that was really fun to then make cow cheese, and I would have kept going, but the pull from the other side of the Atlantic was saying, come home and, you know, finish school. So at the end of the year, after I got in a little olive oil harvest, I did come back, and I finished school, and of course I turned all of my schoolwork into studying local agriculture and sort of asking the question, like, of why does Tuscany have to have the beautiful landscape and we develop our countryside here in the States? Why don't we keep our own beautiful countryside and take vacations in it?
Right. So. Right. Well, that's okay. So that's a perfect point. I think we need to take a quick break, but when we come back, we can talk about how you translated that idea into a successful business and delicious cheese. Stay with us. We'll be back on Cutting the Curd.
All on the plains of Mexico, 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 away, Santiano. Mexico is a place I know, all on the plains of Mexico.
Nassau girls ain't got no comb,
away, Santiano.
They combs their hair with a kipper backbone,
all on the plains of Mexico.
Mexico,
Mexico, away, Santiano.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby, and my guest today is Luella Hill, cheesemaker at Narragansett Creamery. So I'm really bummed out that you can't hear the interim music. I had them play some sea shanties because, you know, you guys are making cheese in the ocean state. And so, and the shanty, it was cool. I was talking all about Mexico. And so that has another tie-in because you guys make so many wonderful sort of Latin style cheeses, which we'll get to in a minute. So you got back to the States and you were finishing school. Where were you going to school, by the way?
At Brown University.
Okay, so you're in Providence. Are you born and raised in Long Island or in Rhode Island?
No, I'm a total poser. I'm actually from this little border town in Arizona called Bisbee. It's right on the Mexican border.
Ah, okay, okay. And so interesting. Okay, so but you saw the opportunity to do agricultural studies in Rhode Island, and so what did you do after you finished school?
So I had just gotten a major B in my bonnet, and I was madly in love, like cross-eyed, crazy, crazy mad woman about this idea of, like, save the farms and eat local, and life is so beautiful if you just, you know, grow a garden and make your own cheese and bread, or, you know, I maybe went almost off the deep end. I think the biggest moment for me was coming back from Italy, and I was in this Greyhound bus station and watching somebody, you know, eat some just terrible-looking bologna and saltine crackers, you know, while watching television, not even looking at the food. And that was just in such stark contrast to that Italian lunch table that I'd recently been at.
Yeah, yeah. Did you go evangelical on them? Did you, like, you know, start proselytizing in the Greyhound station?
I know, almost. I just started crying. I just thought, like, oh, I'm so sad. Then the next thing I started talking to farmers in Rhode Island and saying, what are you growing? Are you growing food? Where is it going? And I went into grocery stores and said, where are these tomatoes coming from? It's August. And I started just sort of investigating, and on and on and on. I started realizing that there was a quick, easy connection to make, which was connect farmers with local buyers. And this, it was just the right timing. And as you know, people were starting to click on to this idea. And so in a very short amount of time, I had graduated and convinced Brown University Dining Services to hire me to be their local purchasing coordinator.
Wow, that is such a huge step, because that really, I mean, to even now, what, in 2010, you know, a lot of universities say that they want to do that, but they don't really make it happen.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's definitely not cheap and it's not easy.
Mm-hmm.
Just to not go on and on, I basically got this swirled into this, like, you know, the wave was about to break of this huge local food movement, and I was connected to all the farmers. My phone was ringing off the hook. They're saying, I've got, you know, 3 bushels of cabbages and this and that, and I'm calling, and pretty soon the, you know, restaurants are calling me. I'm basically becoming this, you know, this vegetable broker, you know, out of my one-room apartment.
Uh-huh.
Because I'd started doing it for Brown, but really everybody wants local.
And so did you establish farmers markets, didn't you?
Yeah, so then it was a fairly quick evolution to the founding of a nonprofit called Farm Fresh Rhode Island.
Awesome.
So, yeah, so then I was totally immersed in the world of nonprofits and grant writing and public speaking and just the generally dealing with all of these farmers' problems and emotions and politics. And it was great. But as any of your listeners who've tried to manage farmers know, managing farmers is like herding cats.
Oh my God, completely, completely. Well, and everyone, you know, as you are a cheesemaker yourself now, you know, everyone has such... There should be at least 48 hours in a day, if not more.
Yeah.
So it's really hard to get everybody together.
Yeah.
But so...
So then I got burnout. I just, like, at some point I said, I'm sitting at a computer. I can't stand it.
Right. That's... You want to be on the farm.
Yeah. I mean, I just want to get... I want to be immersed. I have to be immersed. I have to be physically engaged in making food. I think that's just my set of cards or something.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I left that job I took time off or I stepped aside, and I contacted or linked up with the Maine Cheese Guild.
Okay.
Through Mosca. And this is another pitch for another great way for your listeners to get linked in with a cheese making opportunity.
That's what I want. I want to provide people with, like, concrete information. Like, these are sources. This is where you go if you want to apprentice, if you want to learn about cheese making. So Mosca, let's talk about it. I love the Common Ground Fair.
Oh, yeah. So anyone who hasn't gotten it right, Mosca stands for Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association. And perhaps hands down one of the most brilliant organizations, most smartly run organizations in the country. One of their programs is a farmer apprenticeship, and it's the same idea as WOOF. So through them, I just put in an application, and then they gave me back a listing of farms that were looking for help, and there's a couple of cheesemakers and dairies on that listing. So I... connected up with Appleton Creamery, which is in Appleton, Maine.
Okay.
And Caitlin Hunter is a very kick-ass cheesemaker up there who's got a lot on her plate and a beautiful herd of mainly alpine goats, a little bit of Sanin mixed in.
Mm-hmm.
So I went up there again right around the time of the kidding, late winter, early spring. And
the most chaotic time of the year. I love it. You jump in just when everyone's like at their wit's end and you just you can save the day. It's like, da-da-da-da.
But it is a smart time. I mean, if people want to make cheese and see the full picture, you might think about, they might think, one might think about trying to get there in that time, because that's when the milk, the flush of milk comes in and there's so much milk to deal with.
And then you can also see how the milk changes through the season because, you know, that's a really important part of cheese making too, knowing how to read what your milk is doing at different times of the year.
Right. And I also feel like just to understand where milk comes from. Like, I know we know milk comes out of udders, and udders are on animals, but there's really this bigger picture of, like, well, there's only milk because the herd gave birth. And so, I mean, you understand the intimacy and the preciousness of the milk, I think, by being there.
I remember I didn't know that. I after I graduated from college, I had approached the cheesemakers at Cato Corner Farm in Connecticut about having a cheesemaking internship with them because, you know, I wanted to get out of the city and I love cheese, and I thought making cheese would be like fun and interesting, and so they you know, miraculously told me that that was okay. And I remember driving up to Connecticut with Mark Gilman, who's the cheesemaker, and him and Christina, who was the other intern at the time, talking about how, you know, the cows were freshening. And I was like, freshening? I was like, what the heck does that mean? You know, I grew up in suburban Chicago.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God. I was like, cows have to have babies to make milk. It was like this revelation. Yeah. And I felt like such an idiot. I just kind of like shrunk down to the size of a pea in my seat. And, but yeah, it's really, you have to, it is a very intimate relationship, and that's super important for people to be a part of.
Yeah, totally. So I was making goat cheese, started making goat cheeses with Caitlin, and Caitlin is like, she's just this incredible artist. She's doing so many different kinds of cheeses. She is not only working her own goat milk, but she's buying in beautiful sheep milk from Ell's Farm, which is down the road, and she's buying in beautiful organic cow's milk, and she's mixing the milks, and she makes tiny batches and a little of this and wash drying and camembert and yogurt. And so I'd already done sheep milk and cow milk in Italy, so this time I got to work goat milk and then see a lot of mixing of the three and two, you know, sheep and cow or whatever.
Yeah. Well, so I know we have about, I would say 7 minutes or so left. And I want to just be able to make sure we talk about Narragansett Creamery.
Okay.
Because you guys are doing such amazing work, and so it's such an amazing story. So, and I know that you're probably like me. I never really like to talk about like my projects. I just want to like promote everybody else.
Yeah, yeah.
But
okay,
you
so
have...
The creamery, so while I was in Maine, I went back to my, in my mind, like to managing Farm Fresh Rhode Island and these farmers markets, and prior to Narragansett Creamery, there was no cheese being made in Rhode Island and probably hadn't been for at least a decade.
Wow, okay.
So the culture had fallen away. The Rhode Island Department of Health, we love them, but just has no familiarity with the process.
Well, and that's very funny. I was actually reading in Edible Rhode Island just this week, I guess. At one time, Rhode Island was the cheesemaking capital of New England.
Yeah.
And up until 1880, there were over 6,000 dairies in the state, which is like, you know, the size of a postage stamp. And now there are 17, they said. So it's crazy that tradition completely died out. But so anyways.
So I started contacting the Department of Health, and because I wanted to work with them to spell out what would the requirements be, and you know, it basically came down to, you know, it's going to be a major investment. I wrote every dairy farmer and said, would you like to take this step with me, and we could go build a facility, and I will make the cheese. Nothing really worked, no bites, and I was sort of thinking like, oh my gosh, do I take out $1 million loan?
Yeah.
And then I was at a meeting with the Department of Health, and the director of food safety says to me so casually, he says, why don't you just go down the road and talk to Mark Federico? And I'm like, huh? And he's like, he's making cheese, you know, down the road over there on Atwell's. And I was like, what are you talking about? And so the short of it is, lo and behold, 2 miles from the center of Providence, from the, you know, the city hall,
yeah,
there's this old industrial area, and one building is zoned for dairy processing.
No
and
way.
It's been bottling local milk for the past 60 years, and then was uninhabited for about 10 years before and after, until Mark Federico, who's my boss and the co-founder of Narragansett Creamery, went there and started making fresh mozzarella curd for the wholesale market.
Okay.
So he had been making, and also a feta, he'd been making these cheeses. They were all being shipped to New York and New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
So here I was, this local food crazy head, and had no idea there was cheese being made in the whole state. And then just, you know, in this totally unassuming building, Mark's busy making cheese. And so I approached him and said, Mark, you're crazy. You have got to get this cheese on the market. We have got to package it smaller. Like, people will go crazy for local cheese made in Providence. So he said, I know. I've been thinking this for years. I just don't have the time. And I joined, put my energy towards it. He gave me so much space. We decided to name it Narragansett Creamery after Narragansett Bay.
Uh-huh.
And the first meeting, he said, you know, because he works on larger vats for the mozzarella curd, I said, you know, I'm interested. I'm trained as an artisan cheesemaker. I'm interested in making smaller production, like 100 gallons, you know, not 1,000 gallons or 5,000 gallons. And he took me into the make room, and there was his little test vat, which is a 40-gallon vat, and right next to that is a 200-gallon vat. So it was just like, it was a turnkey operation.
Everything was there. That's amazing.
And in just, I mean, we started testing cheeses right away, but it was, yeah, literally months later, we had the mayor cut the first wheel of Divine Providence. And
beautiful.
Yeah.
And so now you make, I mean, I think one of the most amazing things about Narragansett Creamery is that you guys make this amazing array of cheeses, from everything from the traditional sort of fresh mozzarella curd to Latin American style cheeses to aged cheeses, and that translation of, you're kind of addressing all these different needs and different traditions and cultures and populations from one small creamery. Can you talk a little bit about the different kinds of cheeses you make and why?
Yeah, sure. So Mark and his wife is Patty, and they really are the owners together. Their family is from Benevento, Italy, and so they have a tradition and a pride and a love for traditional Italian cheeses, which is why they're making fresh mozzarella and this fresh ricottas. So that's the Italian influence. And then I would be the one who's worked with people like Appleton Creamery and, you know, mixed and matched and tried this and natural rind and a little bit of that, a little bit of this. So that would be the origin of some of the, you know, more hybrid European style cheeses that we make. And then the Latin influence is that we have a couple of guys that work with us, and they're from Guatemala. And the Guatemalan cheeses started just to serve our internal needs. One of the cheesemakers, Arturo, he was just making queso fresco for himself and a few other people. And then the bakeries the bakeries started asking if they could get some of that queso fresco and some queso blanco. And before we knew it, we had, you know, this little local demand for the Latin cheeses. And then it was Mark's bright idea that, oh, well, maybe other people want to try this queso fresco and queso blanco. And we sell
a lot of that now, because, you know, it's funny, I feel like that's one of the most amazing things in a lot of cities up and down the Eastern Seaboard. There are a lot of populations from different countries in Latin America, but no real local source for freshly made cheeses. And in New York, I feel like I always thought that was lacking. And so when I found out that you guys made queso fresco and queso blanco, I was so excited, because there is a huge demand for it. And there is a huge difference in taste between the industrial stuff and the artisan stuff. So that's just amazing that you guys sort of hooked into that, and through your community of people working with you, you know, turn it into a wonderful product.
Thanks. Yeah, and I'm excited. And the nature of queso fresco and queso blanco, if you think about all of Latin America, is it's probably a cheese that doesn't even get refrigerated. It gets made, sold, eaten.
That same day. Kind of like mozzarella should be, ideally, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And so the nature of those cheeses are they really, by nature, shouldn't be shipped from another country or shipped from across the country.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So if people want to learn more about Narragansett Creamery, how can they find out? Do you guys have a website or?
Our website is richeeses, plural. .com. So RICHEESES.
RICHEESES.com. Perfect. Mm-hmm. Are there any plans for new cheeses in the upcoming season or anything like that? Or are you guys kind of happy with your line of cheeses as they stand now, the Italian and the Latin American and the aged European style?
Yeah, we've always got stuff up our sleeve for sure.
And that's good.
We're always doing small batches. We've been kind of blown away. We've been making yogurt, and that's just gone like gangbusters.
Your yogurt is so good. I just tried that for the first time this week and was like, oh my goodness.
Thank you. That's really nice. And I do a lot of small batch stuff that I just bring to the farmer's market. And again, that's Mark. He's just gives me all this creative space that I get to just play. So I have been making kefir, and that's also, people have just been going really crazy for that. I have to do a little more testing before I can figure out how to get it, you know, ready for wholesale and shipping. And then we're also, you know, we're playing around with some seasonings, putting some chilies or some cumin seeds into some of our aging wheels, and so we don't have anything specific that's about to roll out, but we're always busy.
But like you said, lots of tricks up your sleeve. That's awesome. That's exciting for the rest of us. We can just, you know, wait with bated breath to see what's next. And well, so I think unfortunately we have to wrap it up in just a second, but you know, just as a final thing, do you guys offer any kind of internships, or if people wanted to, you know, learn cheese making from Narragansett Creamery, is that a possibility?
Definitely. We've had a couple of interns. We usually, our interns to date have been local goat farmers.
Uh-huh.
Because we're trying to help them get their cheese efforts on the road. But if people are interested, by all means, send me an application or a resume or an email letting me know that you're interested, and we can definitely talk. And my info is on the website.
And that is www.richeeses.com.
Yep.
Wonderful. Well, unfortunately, I think we're out of time for the day, but I thank you so much for taking the time out on a Sunday in between soup making and napping and laundry doing to talk cheese. It's been really fun, and I hope you'll come back onto the show again in the future.
Awesome. Hey, thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
All right. We'll see you soon, and see you next Sunday on Cutting the Curd.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby.